You're listening to the Golden West Podcast. I'm Ryan, your host. Join me as I explore the best in food and wine on the West Coast, including California, Oregon, and Washington. We're about to go on a journey, exploring the people and stories behind the vineyards, farms, and kitchens. So grab a drink, fire up your grill, pull up a seat to the table, and listen in. We'll talk about it coming up next. Today's show is brought to you by the hardcore wine dudes at First Bottle Wines. First Bottle is a sister site to the wildly popular one wine per day website Last Bottle Wines. First Bottle is based in Napa, California, and the team is well connected to hundreds of wineries, brokers, distributors, and importers all over the world, and they have spent decades building trust with them. Offering quality wines at unbeatable prices is their top priority. You'll see lots of big names on First Bottle. They've got older vintages, collectibles, and approachable daily drinkers from every major wine region. They taste over 50,000 wines a year and know how to pick a winner. So visit firstbottlewines.com and use promo code GOLDENWEST at checkout for 10% off your first purchase. That's promo code GOLDENWEST at firstbottlewines.com. Today's show is brought to you by Kova Coffee. Kova is a specialty roaster out of Portland, Oregon, and they're known for single-origin coffees, and they're committed to long-term, sustainable partnerships with coffee producers. Now, if you're like me, I love coffee. I always start my day off with a cup or two. I make it by hand with a pour-over, but it doesn't matter how you make yours. You can use a pour-over, maybe use a Chemex, maybe you just use a basic Mr. Coffee machine. It doesn't matter, but what does matter is the beans. You don't want those burnt, over-roasted corporate coffee beans that you find in the grocery store, and I don't even bother with that store brand stuff. So here's what you do. I'm going to make it really easy for you. Just go to kovacoffee.com, that's C-O-A-V-A-coffee.com, and use our promo code, GOLDENWEST. You'll get $5 off your first purchase. Do it now while you're thinking about it, and your coffee will show up at your doorstep as soon as you know it. Today on the show, we have John and Kat Hong, owners, chefs, and creators of a new restaurant in Los Angeles called Yangban Society. Enjoy my conversation with John and Kat. John and Kat, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Now, it's great having you here. So I first heard about Yangban in the Wall Street Journal was the article I saw, and then I was reading about you in Eater LA. I was just really excited about what you both are doing here and bringing this really amazing concept to Arts District here in downtown LA. We're going to talk all about the restaurant, but first let's just go back to your history, how you both met and how you worked your way up through the restaurant business in Santa Monica and then up to Napa Valley and before coming back to LA.
Cool. Yes, that's good. So John and I met while we were both line cooks at Molise in Santa Monica. And at that time I had been living in LA and working in LA for a little while and was kind of, you know, looking on to what I might do next. You know, like a lot of young cooks and line cooks, you try to like get as many experiences as you can. And, so I was looking for a change and, we actually hosted a guest chef dinner at Molise. And Christopher Costow was the guest chef from Meadowood in the Napa Valley. And I just like loved his style, his energy, his food. It was super exciting. It was different. And so I pursued getting a job there. And then I ended up getting a job and moving to the Napa Valley. And then staying there and working there and living there for almost 9 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. John, I'd love to hear from you too about kind of how you got into the business and obviously meeting there at in Santa Monica.
Sure. I think I've always had a love for cooking since a young age. I think I've always had family members living with me as an immigrant and a child of immigrants, that is. So there was always a lot of cooking going on at home, which has always been an inspiration of mine and always kind of inspired me to obviously become a chef. So yes, we met cooking in Santa Monica. Kat's story is very different than mine, but we were line cooks together. Kat had gone to work for Christopher and I had kind of been a little behind in that she was has moved on, and I was looking for new work as well. She had called me and offered me a position potentially at Meadowood, which I had jumped at the opportunity. They had just received 3 stars, and it was kind of seemed like the right moment for me to make a switch as well. I ended up doing a stage there, getting the job, and then moving up there in, I would say, February of 2011. Same story. We cooked there. We worked through the ranks together. Kat had eventually become sous chef, followed by myself, and then ultimately taking this role of chef de cuisine, which I followed her as well in when she departed for the Charter Oak.
Yeah, no, that's an amazing story. And talk a little bit about the Meadowood, and obviously with the recent fires and the disaster that went on, it was really sad to see that. But you know, up until that point, that restaurant was really known as kind of the pinnacle, kind of up there with the French Laundry. I think most people know it as. But I'd love to hear a little bit about just working there, and you know, any interesting stories that you both have.
Yeah, I mean, the restaurant at Meadowood, it was like truly a magical place. As a cook, you know, when I first moved out there and I went to go visit the property, it's just like, you know, you follow this like long windy road through wine country and you see all these like gorgeous, beautiful vineyards. And there's sometimes like animals grazing out front and there's like mustard flowers everywhere. And it's just gorgeous. And then you get to the property and you go down this like long windy road and finally make it to the back to the restaurant entrance. And it's just stunning and it's different. And you feel like you're a part of something really special. And, you know, they have their own farm that's where they share land with the local Montessori school. And like every morning, you know, you're receiving your harvest from the farm that you put them order in the night before. And, you know, Christopher was progressive, at least at that time, you know, he was hiring, you know, people to run projects for fermentation and starting programs of foraging and using, you know, wild things that are native to Napa. Trying to build relationships with local artisans who would make our plates and some of the artwork in the restaurant. You know, he took us to a woodworker studio also on another beautiful property. And that gentleman ended up making us like a lot of serving vessels and like wooden boxes that we used in the restaurant. I had just never experienced a restaurant or like a place of that caliber that was so, you know, invested in its community and truly supporting, you know, the land, the artisans, and fellow people of Napa Valley, and incorporating that so much in like our dinner service and what we did. Yeah. So for me, it was just a totally new experience. It got me thinking outside of just like being a cook and being in the kitchen, but seeing the bigger picture and the bigger story.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I mean, people always talk about farm to table, and I know that's kind of a buzzword, but, you know, being able to really live that and to actually have the farm right there on the property and to be able to get that fresh produce and everything, I can see how that kind of ties in as far as, you know, thinking outside of just working in the kitchen in kind of the more of a holistic manner. After that, you went to the Charter Oak, also in Napa Valley, and you earned a nomination for the James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant. Talk about that experience and what that was like.
Yeah, the Charter Oak. Also, you know, I learned so much there. Also a great experience. Very different, you know, from when I first moved to the Valley and, you know, started as a cook at the restaurant at Meadowood and kind of worked my way up and, you know, developed there over the years. When we started working on the Charter Oak, it was kind of like a challenge in a different way of thinking and in a different way of approaching food. At the restaurant at Meadowood, you know, you do this tasting menu, and for a lot of people, it's like a very much a destination and maybe the only time that they'll ever dine with you. Versus when we were, you know, talking about Charter Oak, we were really trying to do something for the community and create a place that, you know, had all the same values as the restaurant at Meadowood, and but was a place where, you know, you could eat multiple times a week, you could come with your family, the cooks could hang out there. And then, of course, there was the element of the live fire cooking, which I had never really done before. So I got to learn a lot about working on a hearth and, cooking over live fire. So a very different experience, but yet, you know, we have a lot of similarities. We shared the garden. We shared the program of the fermentation and the preservation. So a lot of similarities, but just getting to see it through in a different way.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it seems like an amazing experience. And John, you won a bunch of awards over the 9 years that you were at Meadowood, and you eventually worked your way up to Chef de Cuisine. Talk a little about, just being able to, you know, have that experience and what life was like, I guess, for both of you working in the Napa Valley, you know, being Korean Americans. And we're going to talk about that and how you think about that with your new restaurant and some of the things you're trying to do there as far as blending, different food, American food and Korean food. But yeah, what was that experience like from that angle?
Yeah, I think being in the Napa Valley and kind of coming up in that kitchen was obviously super special, inspirational, and I've learned so much. Just kind of being able to think out of the box. I think Kat had mentioned a lot of these things and kind of rewiring your brain and how you cook. The idea of most chefs, myself included, would sometimes ideate an idea for a dish from its inception, meaning its final form, versus now, you know, we're talking about growing vegetables two seasons out for the beginning of a dish. So it just kind of rewired how to think about food, a deeper connection to the land and where the food comes from. And that for me was super powerful. As far as being a Korean American in Napa, I wouldn't say we had a lot of good Korean food per se in the area. We cooked a lot of Korean food at home. It made us kind of appreciate Korean food when we visited LA to visit family.
But the time that we lived in Napa, like, we really embraced living in Napa. At the end, we were living in like a cottage in the woods. and, you know, it's just this lifestyle. Like, when you first move out there, it's so odd. It's very different. You take all of these cooks, a lot of whom have come from cities, you know, like Chicago, San Francisco, LA, New York, and now they're all like out in the country in the woods, and, you know, there's like deer running through your yard and wild turkeys, and it's a totally different experience, but very cool. I'm glad we had that. But it's odd to do that kind of secluded experience, I guess, like in your 20s, kind of.
Yeah. I was thinking about that same thing, just so how different it is working compared to in a major city compared to Napa Valley. And I've lived up there as well, so I can definitely relate to that. That makes a lot of sense. And thanks so much for going through your backgrounds there and being able to come up and have those really interesting experiences. Let's move to Yongbon Society. And yongbonla.com is the website. We'll have it in the show notes. I believe you have an Instagram. You have some other stuff. We'll link everything in the show notes along with the articles that people should definitely check out. As I mentioned, Wall Street Journal, Eater LA, they have some really cool photos and some really great information. But, you know, let's just get into everything about the new restaurant, your vision, why you wanted to start it, the concept, all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's something that we've been talking about and thinking about for many years, actually. Like, a lot of times, cooks, chefs, in their spare time when they get out of work and go home, you kind of talk about, like, concepts and menus and things that you want to do and kind of, like, you know, dream ideas, if you will. And, you know, for a long time when we were at the restaurant at Meadowood and doing, like, you know, fine dining and three Michelin star style food. I think for a while we thought, you know, it would be really cool to like learn more about our roots and really like dive into Korean cuisine and its regions and, you know, its ingredients and kind of do it in a very high end way. But then, you know, as we started like getting a little bit older and then, you know, I got pregnant with our daughter Sia and we were about to be parents and have a family, I think our priorities switched a little bit. And while we really still wanted to get in touch with our roots and embrace Korean cuisine, we also wanted something that was more community driven and that we could reach more people and it could be more approachable for everyone. And then also, you know, we came up as cooks where, you know, a lot of times you don't make a lot of money, you don't have a lot of free time. And so we want to kind of have a place where we can support like newer, younger artisans as well. People who may be students, people who may be cooks or in art school or design school, and have a place where everyone can come.
Yeah, that sounds great. Tell us about the concept and the type of food that's going to be served.
Sure. So the type of food, I guess, for just lack of a better term, is Korean-American. I guess maybe a little American than Korean. We are definitely using Korean food as an inspiration and incorporating Korean ingredients, but it's food that's authentic to us. And, you know, John was born, you know, in Chicago and grew up in the United States. I was adopted and, you know, have lived here all my life. So it's reflective of our experiences just in our childhoods as well as cooking throughout the years. So very Korean influenced, but American and authentic to us. And it will be in the format of a traditional deli. So it'll have a lot of foods on display, some specials coming out from the kitchen. It'll have like a traditional ticketing system. So you take a number, come up to the counter, kind of have some banter and exchange and order what you like. Everything is sold by weight at the deli. So you can have as little or as much as you would like. But yeah, inspired by delis. John grew up in a suburb of Chicago. I'm from the East Coast. I grew up in upstate New York, and very much are we both influenced by not only Jewish delis, but just deli culture as a whole.
Yeah, I think also just kind of touching on our respective kind of stories being Korean Americans and being so different in that Kat being adopted to a Jewish father and an Irish Catholic mother growing up in upstate New York. Myself, second generation Korean American, growing up with immigrant parents in a predominantly white Jewish neighborhood, suburb of Chicago, and kind of exploring the differences, but also the similarities in being Korean American, growing up Korean American, and also trying to represent what Korean American is now in 2021.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I can see here you're also going to be having something like a little store that's part of this part of the deli, and it's quite a large space, a 5,000 square foot space. Talk a little bit about that and what your vision is there.
Yeah, I think the jumping off point of the store itself was one to utilize the space in a different manner. It's also a place to kind of talk about the supers of Korea, the corner stores, these neighborhood mom and pop shops, and give a little nod to that. We wanted to explore some of those intricacies. We wanted to be able to offer our beverages, cocktails, wines in a more interesting, more fun and casual manner, and also make it more about the marketplace, about the gathering, and being able to go back for seconds, pick wines that you've never tried before in maybe smaller formats. Exploring kind of the options. We're also planning on having apparel, knickknacks like incense and some soaps and sponges, these sponges that are traditionally like a Korean housewife pastime of knitting these sponges that are beautiful. We're getting them made by a woman in Pasadena. What else?
It's also an opportunity for us to you know, celebrate and support local companies, so LA-based companies, and also Asian American-owned companies. So everything that we sell in the super will either be LA-based or Asian American-owned.
Yeah, I love that, and I love the creativity that's really going into this, down to the curation of the products and everything there. It sounds really great and interesting. Let's get into the actual area. So downtown LA Arts District, a lot of people know it, but for those who don't, why did you choose this particular area? What does it mean to you both? And what do you think the vision is as far as you know, where this particular area is going? Because I think it's really exciting, and it's been happening now for a while and kind of building up to the point to where it's a really popular spot.
Sure. Yeah, I think initially when we were looking for spaces, our search started a lot more west. We were looking in Santa Monica. We were looking in the Fairfax District. And we actually really fell in love with Santa Monica for a lot of reasons. We liked the cold air. We liked being by the beach. We liked the fact that our daughter would be able to play on the beach and be kind of like raised as an ocean girl. But kind of as the process went on, we had the opportunity to look at this space. And when we came here, we kind of were reminded of some of the inspiration of what Yangban was in its genesis, and that urban kind of raw material and concrete and the artistic side of kind of what we were trying to approach felt like this was the right fit versus a Santa Monica, Fairfax. We thought Fairfax, we may be kind of just jumping on. And here it felt like we could start something new and of our own.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. When I think about different areas, like you mentioned, Fairfax, there's a handful of restaurants I can think of who started off there quite a while ago, and they've had a lot of success. Santa Monica, obviously, it's eclectic. You have a lot of, you know, really high-end ones like Melis, where you were, and then you have kind of all across the board. But the Arts District, really, it's been up and coming for a while, and I feel like there's just a lot of anticipation and excitement that of kind of what's going on in that area. And so I think it does make a lot of sense for kind of the artistic vibe also of what your vision is for this place. So yeah, you know, lastly, let's just get into a little bit about when people can expect to be able to eat and enjoy this great food. Again, we're going to link some of the links here in the show notes, but people definitely have to check out Wall Street Journal and Eater. There's some really cool photos of a couple of the dishes that you're going to be having. I know the full menu hasn't quite been released yet, and there's still a lot of anticipation. The website is still kind of a work in progress as far as being able to reveal too much, but tell people, you know, when they can be able to, you know, eat at the restaurant, how they can follow you guys, whether Instagram or website, those type of things.
Yeah, so we are hoping to be open by the end of October. It's an exciting time. Things are ramping up now. We actually have our first food photo shoot scheduled for next week that we're really excited about, with two really great local photographers. And yeah, website design's wrapping up. We're almost there. So hopefully end of October. And we do have Instagram at YangbanLA. Again, we kind of have a landing page right now, but hopefully that website will be up probably within the next few weeks. Opening menu, you know, it is set, but I think we just like to take all the time we can to keep tinkering. So we're just waiting for the very last moment until someone forces us to put it up. it's pretty much set. And we're still kind of cooking through that. Our sous chef just started with us. So we're kind of like just going back and looking at some of the recipes and making a few tweaks. But we're almost there, and we are very close to welcoming people in.
Well, this has been so great having you, Kat and John. And I know I'm really excited to be able to come eat at this Korean American deli. I know there's a lot of anticipation out there from foodies all over LA, and hopefully even all over California and the US. I saw you had some great press about top things to do in LA and things not to miss in LA from a couple of press outlets. So I'm sure there'll be people coming from all over. Really appreciate you joining. I think the last question I had is just a question on what's your favorite Korean restaurant here in LA? If you're just looking to go out to kind of more of a traditional Korean restaurant, there's a few that I've been, Chosun Galbi, Kagnam. I haven't been to Parks yet, but between, you know, Chosun and Kagnam, they're both really good. I think it's just everyone I talk to has their place that they like. So I was just curious to kind of wrap up. If you could pick one, I don't, maybe that's not possible, but
yeah, there's so many good places.
There's so many good places. I think for you, if you definitely haven't been to Parks, I would definitely check it out. It's kind of one of those institutions as far as Korean barbecues. For me personally, my favorite place is Honey Pig, which it's not a hot pot, but essentially they take a lid, traditionally a lid, cook over fire, and it's pork belly, it's kimchi, it's bean sprouts, it's brisket. They fry rice at the end. It's definitely, I think it's my favorite.
But all the meat kind of like, as like the pork is rendering, all the kimchi and these soybean sprouts are kind of like stewing in all the pork fat that's rendering out. So it just gets better the longer that you're there.
Yes.
Where do we get this stuff?
That's great. Well, thanks so much for the recommendation. That gives people who haven't heard of that one, and I definitely want to try it. It gives people an idea of something to try out there. So John and Kat, thanks so much for coming on, and I'm really looking forward to coming out, and we're happy to get the word out there for the listeners.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us today. If you like the show, we encourage you to tell a friend. You can support the show by subscribing to our email newsletter for just $5 a month. Find it on our website at goldenwestpodcast.com. In it, you'll find unique bottles from both popular and undiscovered winemaking talent, among other things. If you have feedback, find us on Twitter, @GoldenWestPod. Or you can email us at goldenwestpodcast@gmail.com. As a reminder, all opinions expressed by guests are solely their own and may or may not reflect the views of their employer or any other affiliated entity. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be used as a basis for investment decisions or any other advice. Please eat and drink responsibly, and thanks for listening.